listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this awesome episode of Wake Up Hollywood. We have writer, actor, producer, and director, Srijith Nair. Say hello, Srijith.
Hey, what's up, Nikhil? Thank you for having me.
Of course, man. How are you, dude? I like that you got the movie poster behind you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's always a great backdrop for interviews, like having a poster of myself.
Hell yeah. You're like, which one are you? Oh yeah, you're that one.
I'm this guy.
So you come from the same part of India that I come from. We're both from Kerala.
Yeah.
So when was the last time you went to Kerala? I have to ask that off the bat.
I'm actually about to be going there this April for my cousin's wedding. And then the last time I was there was in 2019. Which I mean, yeah, just to, like, visit family, and yeah, I mean, of course, COVID like killed travel for a while, so it's been about a good about to be 4 years, yeah. So I'm excited to go back and visit Kerala again, and I just love I'm just so grateful about always connecting with more creative Malayalis. So thank you, man.
Of course, we're a rare breed, dude. There's only a couple of us. So you grew up in Chicago. Tell me what it was like, kind of like growing up in the environment that, I mean, this is like hearing my own story on some levels, because, you know, you grew up as a Malayali, you know, a Southeast Asian, and, you know, growing up in an Indian household, you're kind of taught to do academics and you're kind of like that school is number one. Tell me how you just kind of developed as an artist at a young age to love movies and film. Tell me how that process went down.
So, yeah, I mean, very much like any traditional South Asian family, like, you know, for me, it was very always about academics. And I grew up with, like, my mom, my dad, and my older sister, who is now a pharmacist in Philadelphia. Growing up in Chicago, yeah, I mean, you do have that feeling of, like, being the token Indian in school. But I loved growing up in Chicago. I think it's really shaped a lot of like who I am today. And what's always been interesting about my upbringing is that it's like, you know, in kind of both worlds, you don't fully belong. It's like, you know, here in the US, it's like you're the token Indian guy in school, but actually in India, you're the kid who everybody knows from America. So of course my Malayalam is always broken. And
at least you have some. I only know two things, man. I have very little Malayali knowledge. So you're already batting 1,000 right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do want to make a point to, like, actually, you know, maybe start taking more classes in Malayalam or learn how to read or write it some more, because it does work into my scripts a lot. Yeah, so I think the one thing that always drew me was movies, like a chance to kind of escape and like find my identity. The first movie I ever saw in my entire life was Disney's Dinosaur. And then I think that says a lot about me right now, because I literally from there, it was just watching all dinosaur movies, from Jurassic Park to The Land Before Time to King Kong. And that eventually grew into like love of monster movies. So that's how I started loving Godzilla, how I started loving the Universal monsters, like old 80s horror movies like Alien and Predator.
Did you watch old school Japanese versions of Godzilla? Because that's what I grew up with. Those were the best. I love those. And you know what's so weird, seeing the new Godzilla movies? I mean, it's nostalgic for me, you know? But they still don't compare to those old school Japanese ones, man.
I wish. I, I, I wish, like, back in the 1940s or 50s, like, India made some movie that had, like, a guy in a monster suit wrecking miniatures. Like, I just want...
That would have been epic.
I would have... That. I mean, that'll hopefully, if I get the money for it, that'll be, like, my next project. Because, you know, with the classes I'm taking right now, I'm learning how to craft my own monster suits. So...
That's awesome.
If I can get someone to build, like... the city of Mumbai as a miniature so I can smash it.
You'll be walking all over like Legoland doing like, you know, little shots.
Yeah, no, those are the movies that like really impacted me. Like it was the original for Godzilla that finally set off the spark in me and made me say, I want to make movies. And my parents, they were supportive of my craft, but They always told me like the warnings that I feel like everybody entering the entertainment world should know. It's like, oh, you know, it's very difficult for actors to find work, or it's very difficult to have a consistent job. It's like, it's very difficult to get insurance. Like, they never tried to stop me. They just gave me warnings, but I was like, I never listened to warnings.
You're like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. My mom and my dad, I'm great, and my older sister, I'm grateful to all of them for like supporting me through like there were times in my journey throughout the industry where I got so nervous and they were the ones who had to say like, yo, step it up, like you trained for this, like, you know, you can do this.
Did you take any like theater classes in high school or anything like that?
I was part of the high school choir, and I would always be the first person to sign up for plays. Like we did like in high school, I did like Little Shop of Horrors, and we also did Seussical. And I was always very interested in playing like the monster characters or the non-human characters. Like in Seussical, I played the Grinch, or in
Shop
of Horrors, or in Little Shop of Horrors, I played like the scary dentist. So those are the roles that are always the most fun for me. I love playing the villain.
Did you kind of gravitate to, you know, a lot of the monsters and things just because it was a complete escape from like reality and life, or was it just like the sci-fi element? What was it about it that drew you to it?
I think I always root for the character who I think is like the most misunderstood, or who I think is the most like he's painted as very like one note to like, oh, he's just the monster that kills people, or he's just the scary monster in your closet. I don't like to think of non-human characters in that sort of one note way. It's like, I still want to get into like, what is your backstory? What is your motivation? What is your...
You like the psychology of it.
I like the psychology of monsters. Yeah. And it's like, I even when watching like Jurassic Park, I like to think about like, what was the T-Rex thinking in this moment? Or like, what was the motivation to like, you know, chase these humans who did nothing to you? And that was always the love of monster movies for me, was that you get character development and actual depth in creatures that are not human, which has always been the motivation for me, because I love watching King Kong and understanding like what his journey is. And even people sometimes laugh at me when I say this. It's like, I think Godzilla has been through some real trauma. It's like,
oh, yeah, of course, dude. And you know what? What's so cool is like Godzilla had this like super positive vibe, you know, like even in like the terror ones from the, you know, the old Japanese ones, there was like this human, he was always good. Like he was never like a completely evil creature. And what I loved about the recreation of the most recent Godzilla is they used the audio of the original Godzilla sound. I don't know if you noticed that or knew that.
I did notice that, yeah.
I love that. As soon as I heard that, I was like, that is totally awesome, because it took me right back to my childhood. So I can understand, like, seeing some of those movies, why it's nostalgic for you, and it kind of, like, evokes some emotion, and there's a little bit of, like, subtext, you know, and you know, depth in the characters that you kind of draw from. Tell me, of all of the monsters, do you have a number one? Is it King Kong? Is it Godzilla? Do you have like a favorite that is reigned supreme?
I don't try to play favorites, honestly. Like it just, I'm like, cause I recently just watched like Godzilla versus Kong, and everybody's asking me, whose side are you on? It's like, I don't want to pick sides, cause they're both my heroes. So it's like, you know, it's like, I don't try to play favorites with anybody. I try to take inspiration from all of them. Like it's like King Kong and Godzilla, or even other classic monsters. Like, they've all taught me like their own lessons in their own way. Like, if they were real, I would like try to be like, I consider myself like the little protege monster. It's like, I want to follow in their footsteps.
Well, I mean, what's funny too, it's like, I have like Godzilla definitely in the 80s. That was like my monster, my favorite monster, you know. But as far as real monsters, I think Jaws for me was something like of a like a terror to watch as a kid. So you kind of have like these different, you know, kind of monsters that are real and fake, you know. But I also find that like I gravitate towards the era of the monster. So like King Kong, I like the Peter Jackson version of King Kong, because when he saw King Kong, the original, it made him want to be a filmmaker. And I love that he made this, like, you know, ode to, like, that love affair with filmmaking that was started with King Kong. And that's why he made it so epic. And it has such a great story. And I kind of feel like the new King Kong movies are better than the Godzilla movies, you know, on some level.
Yeah, it's so funny, like, when Peter Jackson said that King Kong was a movie that made him want to make movies, because his version of King Kong was one of the films that made me want to make films. In fact, I don't know if I can zoom in on this, but I do have like collectibles and action figures over there of Godzilla.
That is awesome, dude.
Yeah. I regularly collect like Godzilla and King Kong figures.
Yes. So those are your two. Those are the main two.
Yeah. Those are like my two main heroes. And then of course you got like, I get into like just like non-human characters like Optimus Prime, or like the Universal Monsters, or like even like I even get into like, you know, the classic monsters like the Predator or Alien. Yep. Or I love researching classic mythology, like the creatures from Hindu mythology or Greek mythology. Like those are always my main inspirations for me.
And so what made you kind of like want to learn how to make the monster costuming? Like, how did you kind of take, because usually, you know, you'd probably want to find somebody that does that, but what made it more hands-on for you?
I think like, so it took me a while to like, because I had to like kind of discover that I wanted to do that for myself. Because when I first graduated high school and I went to Columbia College Chicago, originally it was just learn how to make a film. So like learn how to direct, learn how to write, learn how to produce. I mean, that was really how my first short film, The Color of Me, happened, where it's like, okay, I've gone through film school, now let me actually make a short film for myself. And then I moved to LA, started working full time for Paramount Plus. And then it was just like, okay, well, where's my career heading right now? And it was shortly after I finished Rajasaur where I had to like hire a bunch of people to make creatures. And then I'm like, I've recently discovered how like overambitious I am. Like, my mind doesn't just focus on one person. Like, I literally have like a library of monsters. Like,
that's awesome.
Happening in my head right now. And so it's like, yeah, I can keep spending however much money it is to keep hiring freelancers to do it, or I can just learn how to do it myself. Cause I'm just so, I've considered myself like very overambitious and very persistent and very relentless to the point where it's like, I can't contain myself to like one freelancer or a group of freelancers. I gotta just learn how to do this myself. So that's what made me want to learn how to craft it myself. And, it's also very much following in the footsteps of more of my heroes, like Ray Harryhausen or Stan Winston, who I'm also like taking classes like at his online school right now. And there really is, I love CGI, don't get me wrong. I mean, right, we use CGI for Rajasaur, but there really is just something about using a stop motion creature like they did with King Kong, or using an actor in the suit, that just makes it feel so much more real and alive. Yeah,
absolutely. We had Alexei Dimitri, who did a lot of the Mandalorian. He does a lot of the Star Wars, like creatures and stuff. And he was talking about his process and how, like, you know, an illustrator or a director will have like an idea of a character, and then it's up to him to kind of like make that character come to life. And it was so cool to see like a comic book, like a sketch, like a storybook version of the character, and then see how it kind of came to life and how it, like, little things with lighting and makeup or like coloring or whatever just enhanced it. Are you finding that there are these degrees that make it more real for you versus, you know, real life, you know, just looking at it, and also how it looks on camera?
There really is. And, you know, I've taken classes with, like, you know, I've modeled for, like, makeup designery. I took classes at this studio called Imagineric. They taught me a lot about clay sculpting and creature sculpting and everything. And I had to learn a lot about, like, what goes into, like, making a real life creature. And it just feels so, like, real. It feels like you're real. It really feels like you're building a character, and you're coming up with a lot of, like, different ideas about what is his origin story. How did he come to be? Even like, I have this little Rajasaurus toy right here.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's like, and, you know, even when we were designing, like, this, the model for the film, it was like, you come up with so many cool ideas as you're, like, modeling. It's just like, what is the origin story? Well, like, why does it act the way that it does? There's so many moments in the film that I love directing where it's just like, when I was, like, really pushing for the animators to be like, hey, really show moments of emotion, like show curiosity, show anger, show furiosity. And it's just like, just trying to attribute all those things to, like, either a dinosaur or a monster or any non-human character, like, it just feels so much more alive and real to me. And I just love
animals. Animals have personality, and monsters do too. So, like, there's a parallel. And when you can kind of see I guess it's the soul, like, seeing the soul of a monster is what makes us kind of, like, understand and bridges the gap a little bit. So I think it's important, and you did that in your film, which I watched today, and you kind of made it like an emotional, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Tell me a little bit about your acting, you know, experience, and, like, how that's enhanced you as a filmmaker and just also taking on these other projects.
Well, it's interesting because I, the way I started off, like, cause when I went to film school, I didn't think I was going to, pursue acting. I thought I was going to pursue more producing, writing, and directing because I have so many stories that I want to tell. And it's so funny. Like, and this is how lack of representation has affected me. Where it's like, you know, when I was growing up, of course, like, I'm watching movies with dinosaurs and monsters and superheroes where there's little to no brown people. Like,
right.
The most, yeah, I. You know, funny story. I was in India when I saw Jurassic World, and everybody applauded when Irfan Khan showed up. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, wow, it took us this long to have just one Indian guy in a Jurassic Park movie. But the lack of representation, like, affected me to where it's like, okay, I'm going to cast all white people in all my projects. And then when I went to film school and I started volunteering for South Asian film festivals, that's when it really did hit me more of like, oh, as a brown person, I do feel like I have a responsibility to, like, represent myself and people who look like me. And that's how I became a lot more more of an advocate for, like, oh, no, we need more brown people in films. Because it's like, how come only white people get to fight dinosaurs? Or how come only white people get to go to space and, like, fight aliens and such? And I started realizing I was writing a lot more roles for South Asians. And then I started to realize that a lot of the things I wanted to write, like, I actually wanted to play. Like, I'm writing a lot of monster characters that I myself want to play. And then that's where it transitioned a lot more to, oh, wait, I think I should pursue acting some more now. And now and before it was always like, oh, I'm going to, like, play the villain or something like that, because I'm always like, you know, I'm typecasting myself as that creature actor. But but I think it's like, because I never fully pursued that actor's life of, like, auditioning, and never knowing if you're even going to get called back.
Right.
So I'm always more of the belief of like making my own opportunities where it's like, okay, if I can raise the money for it, I'm going to make my own films for, hey, this is me presenting myself and this is me presenting my truth about what I want to, both as a writer, as a producer, as a director, and more as an actor now. And I've come to realize like a lot of like my natural kind of instincts, like putting myself in the head of a character and like saying lines, I realized I need to like actually channel that into a lot more. And I wasn't able to fully contain everything I wanted to express just through writing. So it was like, oh, I want to actually play this character now. So that's where it's coming a lot more, where it's like, okay, I really feel like I have a lot to say and I can't just contain it to like a script. I got to contain it as I got to say it as a character.
Right.
And it's actually been, I wish I had discovered earlier, like during my college days, like really just how therapeutic it is to be an actor, because you really get to like live outside of yourself and like present like what one person would call like demons, the other person would call, oh, that's character motivation. So it's like discovering those things within another character, like it was always very intriguing to me, and it always was a nice way to channel like whatever I was thinking at the time, and also to do it with a non-human character too, which I don't feel like many South Asian actors like really do. Like I rarely meet other South Asians who are actually interested in like playing monsters.
Right.
Yeah. So that's something where it's like, okay, this is something very unique that I can like do for myself.
And did you find that there was a little bit of a challenge kind of, cause you know, you had to shoot with, you know, an animation team of some sort coming up with, okay, this is where it's going to be. Did you kind of have something in place of that, you know, so that you could put something there so that you could kind of emote a little bit more? Or did you just kind of like try to wing it and just see how it would work with the animation team putting a dinosaur there?
Well, first things first, I had to like pick locations that where I had to be like, okay, could a dinosaur fit here? Because we looked at all these like different forest preserves that were easy to shoot, but then I said no to some of them because like I don't know how to fit a dinosaur.
Right.
I studied a lot of like how they filmed like Transformers or how they filmed like Jurassic Park, where it's like you shoot a lot of empty plates and you give like a good like frame of reference to how big this dinosaur is. And what made it especially harder was like we started shooting this movie literally in April of 2020.
Wow.
Right when COVID started.
That's crazy.
And, yeah. And for so long, I thought the movie just wasn't going to happen, because it's like, you know, we had a child actress and I got so scared. I was just like, oh my God, like, are we even going to be able to do this? And I came super close to pulling the plug and just being like, hey man, hey guys, I don't know if it's right to do this movie right now. It's like COVID is happening. We got a child actress. Like, we don't have a vaccine. We didn't have protocols. And if it wasn't for my whole crew and Sayonara, who plays my daughter, and her father, who plays Viper Man in the film, like all of them said, like, yo, Srija, we all put in this work. Presumably we're not going to have any work for the next 2 years if we don't make this movie. So like, can we please just make this movie so that we can come out with like something? It's like my crew had to like kind of convince me. It's like, yo, we're gonna do this. And I think especially having the motivation from Sayonara and Sharon James, Viper Man, that was so encouraging to me that everybody was enthusiastic about this. And so that was a challenge. We had to keep our crew down to like a very absolute minimum, because again, at the time we didn't have COVID protocols. And everybody was a great spirit about it. Everybody like knew what we were doing. We had as much fun as we could, because we did have days where it was like, oh my God, the sun's going down. We have to shoot right now to get this right now. But no, I had a great time making the film, and everybody else is like so proud of doing it, and I'm just so thankful like
that it happened. I mean, that's so much of it is just the fact that, like, they always say the real reward is that it got finished. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you had an idea and you put it into action. Before we play the trailer for that, let's play your actor's reel just so people can get a perspective of some of the stuff you've done before. So here's your actor's reel.
Thank you.
And I know I can't do anything for you except apologize.
Well, there's actually one thing. You can stop calling me a bore.
Oh, done. For the record, I said the marriage deal was a bore, not you. And I will not say, it's not you, it's me, even though that is the honest truth.
Okay. All right, look, I gotta go. Good luck.
Thanks. You too. Hey, I hope...
Hey, it's okay.
Get the book!
I got it! What do I do? Just take it!
I don't want it!
I don't want it either!
You take it!
You got a dagger in the sink!
Oh. Good idea!
Why did you throw it back in?
You know what?
Let's never mess with a cursed book ever again, even when we're intoxicated. Deal?
Deal.
Good. Glad that that's over with.
Yep. Want some?
No, I'm good.
How about you, Ricky?
How did you not film some of those scenes without not cracking up? Because some of that's just fun. Yeah, I can just tell there's like, you can definitely tell there's some tomfoolery in between scenes. How did you guys just keep a straight face for some of those?
which one in particular are you most curious about?
Well, the last one with the monster where you guys are throwing the book around. I'm like, there was definitely some funny scenes going on when the camera was off.
Yeah. My college buddies, Andrew Rodriguez and Will Madden. Like, I love those guys. I miss, if you guys are watching from Chicago, I miss y'all. We always just love, comedy horror, and we always just love, like, taking like a situation that should be a little bit scary, right, and just poking one out of it. Like, we're always big fans of like Evil Dead and those kinds of haunted house movies, and I like it when it does come through in the film, at how much fun something was. And doing those kinds of like not knowing you're sitting next to a zombie and screaming, it's just like that's always hilarious. That's amazing.
And you know what? What's cool about that too? It's like, you know, they had like the Transylvania movies like back in the day. Like, I like that genre where it's like comedic horror. And, you know, I actually went to Sundance and I saw Thomas Lennon. He did, he's the guy from Reno 911. He did a New Orleans like horror movie. And I got to meet him recently. And I was like, man, I saw your movie and I loved it. And he's like, man, you know, that was like a film that I was hoping would just, you know, hit with people. But that horror comedy thing is like a niche market, which sucks because it's so good. It's like funny and scary at the same time. How could you not like those two emotions? You know,
it is an upcoming goal of mine to do a comedy horror film with a full Malayalam cast. So,
oh, that would be awesome.
I'm calling you about that pretty soon.
I'm ready, man. I'll line them up, dude. So did you ever draw from like Bollywood or any of that influence to, you know, want to make films as well?
I'm drawing from that a lot more now because a lot of what I'm writing is very much based off of, like, you know, references from Hindu mythology or just like classical Indian stories that like I could work its way into a monster movie. The way I wanted to make Rajasaur was I met Vaishali Shroff, who wrote this amazing book called The Adventures of Padma and a Blue Dinosaur. And it's literally just a book about dinosaurs discovered in India. And
it's awesome.
Yeah, The Adventures of Padma and a Blue Dinosaur by Vaishali Shroff. Please check it out for your kids if you want to teach them about actual dinosaurs discovered in India. And I literally just, I was waiting for her to call me crazy because I just slid into her DMs and was like, yo, I love your book. Let's make a movie. And I was waiting for her to be like, yeah, but she very thankfully responded. I told her like, hey, I want to do a short film. I want to actually feature a dinosaur discovered in India. Let me ask you an honest question. Do you think Rajasaur is just some creative title that I made up, or do you think it's literally the name of
a dinosaur? I actually thought it's a creative name that you made up, like a Rajasaur, because it's like an Indian heritage dinosaur. Is that correct, or is there an actual?
No, it's like, actually look it up. It is a dinosaur discovered in Gujarat, and it's literally named Chris, which means Prince Lizard.
That's crazy. And, that is awesome.
I just love that so much, and I still have to I love how I have to convince people, like,
well, you don't hear that. You don't hear it every day. You know what I mean? That's what's so funny.
Yeah. No, I recently got like a Rajasaurus toy like for my niece's birthday, because it's just like, yeah, like I love T-Rex, but it's just like, come on, y'all, I want some dinosaur representation.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about Color of Me for a second. Because you made this film right out of school, and it's what I love is like you took your love of monsters and the outcast in a way, and you put it in a very human perspective where it's like a shapeshifter that's changing races, and you kind of made this story about showing how hard it is to be an ethnic race of all the races, different faces. How did you kind of come up with this project, and tell me what was kind of like the narrative that made you, it was compelling for you to be a part of it?
That happened like literally right after I graduated from Columbia College Chicago in 2016. And I had volunteered for a lot of South Asian film festivals where a lot of it was really about, we need more representation. And so I took samples like just from my own life about how, like, yeah, I'm brown in America, so people look at me a certain way, but people also look at me a certain way in India because I was raised in the US. And so I very often, and there weren't as many Indians like in my school when I was growing up. And so I very often would make friends with like the African Americans or like the Chinese, Filipinos, or Japanese students in the school, or Hispanic students in the school. Most of the time, like, you know, relating more to like the students of color. And I very often did kind of question, like, you know, how different of a person would I have been if I was black? Or how different of a person would I be if I was white? Or how different of a person would I be if I was East Asian? And it's like, what if I actually was in these different bodies? And so that was what sparked that idea. And to make it like a romance story, because I always love just fairy tale romances. And what I love about romance stories is that I think this is like a inspiration from Bollywood, where it's like you have a character who's like outcasted in his own way, and there's that one person, the romantic interest, who comes in and finally says, "I understand you."
Right.
And to me, it's what I love about romance movies, but it's also what I love about sometimes like monster movies, where it's like you have a character who's outcasted in some way, and all it takes is that one other character to come into your life and just say, "I know what you've been through, and I understand you."
Well, what I like about this story too, it's like it forces compassion. Like,
yes,
it's like taking that quantum leap thing and then pushing you into being that person or seeing it from that perspective. And that's why I thought it was kind of a novel approach. Let's actually play a little bit of the trailer. This is the trailer for Color of Me.
So, what's your name?
Lewis. Lewis Clark.
Lewis Clark? Is that really your name? I'm Lisa. Lisa Adams.
Wait! Don't freak out! Just please don't freak out!
Did your skin just change colors?
Yes.
I have this condition where I turn into other races.
You turn into other races? I actually think it's sort of cool.
Really?
Hey, wait, Lisa. I'm off tomorrow. Would you like to hang out?
Are you trying to ask me out?
Come on. No one knows about your condition except me.
Okay, fine. I'll see you here tomorrow at noon.
Hey, Lewis.
Lisa, your mess kit today? Well, it looks good on you. So, what's it like to be Mexican?
I'm not really Mexican. I just look like I am.
So that's why you had your face like a Sith Lord? Because you playing it safe?
I have to wear this scarf to protect myself.
You can't hide from racism, Lisa. It's a part of life.
Maybe your life, but not mine.
Why did you adopt the black kid?
Lewis, did you punch this kid in the face?
Thank God I'm white again.
What's so bad about being black?
Because I'm not black, and I don't want to be.
And I see today, I hope, just for the way that I will make it better. Said I will make it better with you.
What if it's one of those Disney princess things, you know? Like when you find true love's kiss, the curse gets lifted.
I think you watch way too many movies.
Very cool. It was cool that you got all these different characters to kind of like resemble the same person. How did you kind of find the right characters so that everybody would kind of resemble each other, but also be vastly different in how you were kind of trying to convey the message?
I mean, a lot of those were actors who I knew from attending Columbia, and you know, it took a lot of like, you know, there were some people who I had to like hunt down to be like, "Hey, I think you would be perfect for this because your face somewhat matches this other actress." It was a challenge, yeah, to try to direct five different actresses to act as one person, but that was a challenge I wanted to take for myself, and so. It's been like years since I just watched that trailer, and
that's the great thing about art. It's like a time capsule, so it's like you go back to it. You just finished school when you made this, is that right? So what that process is like. School, tell me, you get out of school and this is your first scope, and it's like a very delicate subject matter. You know, it's like not something that you would think you'd want to jump in for your first film. Tell me what made it compelling for you, just drawing from your own experiences, but also trying to show other audiences what it likes to be of a different, you know, ethnicity.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really just kind of came from, like, you know, a lot of like myself was put into these two characters, where it's like the character of Lewis, played by one of my best friends, Terrell Pierce, who's an amazing actor. What I channeled into like the character of Lewis was the idea that he's outcasted, but he channels it into a way that like he wants to be creative. He doesn't like let his the fact that he's different like beat him down.
Right.
He wants to channel it into something positive, where it's like the character of Lisa is on the more negative side, where she's like forced to be colors that she doesn't want to be. And so she channels it into like, I just want to be a white person because that feels the most safe. I don't want to be anything else.
Right.
And I think it really, I really wanted to dive into a lot of themes about, you know, why do I have to fit into this because of my skin color? And I think it says a lot about, like, you know, what I channel into my work now, where it's just like, you know what, I don't care if, like, nobody sees brown people in a movie about fighting dinosaurs. I'm just making my own dinosaur movie. Like, or nobody sees brown people as superheroes, or nobody sees brown people as like in sci-fi, fantasy, or horror films. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm not. There are people who, and I've met actors like this who are very much like, we're brown people, Srija. We belong in the box, and that's it. And I'm like, I don't believe.
Yeah, that. I mean, I'm an Indian doing rock and roll, so it's like, I definitely subscribe to that, because I feel like stories are stories, and you probably have that outlook because you grew up here and didn't feel, because I grew up in the same way, where it was like, I didn't really connect with the Indians from India when I would go there. And, you know, here I'm already an outsider with culture and trying to, like, you know, make my way to kind of fit the mold. It's just part of, like, growing up, you know, being a first generation kid, you know, like, so I think it's, you draw upon these like really cool themes to kind of bridge that gap, which most people kind of don't understand and take for granted. I think when I was reading about this movie on your bio, I was like, we need to showcase this because it's a really cool theme, and it's a cool way that you kind of convey the message, and also you do it in a way. I mean, I've seen where the African American girl's like, because I don't want to be black, and she's saying that to a black guy. It's like, wow, that's a very poignant moment for, you know, race relations on some level, just to see, oh, this is what people go through. So was it therapeutic to write something like that? Was it challenging also to kind of like direct and, you know, convey what you are writing with the message and the actors and the ensemble? Tell me a little bit about that process.
It was therapeutic, because I got to, like, you know, express my story to a whole bunch of actors who, like, didn't really understand my story. When I say my story, I mean, like, my personal story. And I think it was just so different from what everybody's used to. It's like, oh, I'm playing a woman who changes skin color. Like, this is different. I want to try this. And it was a nice challenge for me as a director, too.
I was just saying, like, was it hard for you to kind of like convey the message of what you wrote with how you shot and how you got, like, you know what I mean? Like, because it's one thing to write the message and then see it played out. It's like a different, you know, way of editing. So did you kind of change things? Like, did lines kind of feel like they were forced, or did you kind of see like that it all came to life and it was able to kind of find its place?
It came to life. Most of it did come to life a lot in the way that I imagined it. And I definitely learned a lot from this movie too, about, like, you know, when you're writing, like, not everything needs to be said. It just needs to be visual. And I had to learn a lot of that through, like, the editing process, because there were a lot of, like, this is something I've taught myself as a writer now, of, like, you know, let the themes speak for themselves. You don't have to, like, fully spell it out for the audience. I have often wondered about re-exploring the concept of the color of me again, and what I would do differently this time. And I'm very happy with all the festival reception that it got and like how clearly everybody understood the message. We even won from the Vegas Black Film Festival the best original concert.
Oh, that's cool. That's
cool. Yeah, which I'm just like, wow, that's that felt very, that was the best award I felt like I could get for that film.
Yeah, it's validating for sure.
Yeah, from a Black Film Festival.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah. And I always felt like there were so many different ideas or concepts that I could pull off, like with this character. I don't fully know what they would be yet if I were to write a feature film, but it's like, I think with the times changing and like, you know, the views of like people of color changing and like, you know, there's definitely a lot more different ideas that I would want to explore with the film that I couldn't get across in like just 20 minutes. That for what I was able to pull off in like 20 minutes, I'm like extremely proud of it and like the reception it got. And it's funny, re-exploring that now, I'm actually more motivated again to like want to re-explore that in a feature film. So,
well, I mean, it just touches on some really timely things. And what I like too, it's like with Rajasaur, it's like you take this mythological kind of experience of an Indian dinosaur living in ancient India. And there's a parallel between these stories. That's what I like, because there's like a through line between both. Tell me a little bit, like when you made that jump from Color Me to Rajasaur, how did you, was it intentional to make that kind of like a color coded, you know, message in the same way with a beast and a human? Or did you just kind of like make it and realize it later, like, oh, this kind of has a parallel for the same reasons in a lot of the same ways?
I love that you noticed that, because even for me, it's like I don't even know if I fully notice that. You don't.
Oh, it's there. I always look for the through line, especially when it's like, if you're the director, you're the storyteller. So it's like, if that theme is paralleled in other works, it makes sense. It's like, oh, okay, this is something that resonates with you, and you may not see it, you know?
I think the more that you mention that, the more I'm noticing it now, too, because, like, there's, like, a five-year gap between, like, The Color of Me and Rajasaur, and I literally just spent years, like, just learning about, like, okay, what are all the things I learned from The Color of Me, and also like just kind of building my career and my network in LA, where it's like, okay, I work for Paramount now. I connected with like pretty much all the South Asians here in LA. And what I think after like finally sort of saving up enough money to like finally make another film, it was just like, all right, I'm going for it. I'm going to make that dinosaur movie. It's like, I feel crazy as hell, but I'm going to do it. So, and, you know, Vaishali was an amazing writing partner on this. And she was actually the one who really encouraged me and said, like, you know, you got to make this marketable for, like, children. And that's how the idea of, like, oh, I have a daughter in this film. And I think for me, it's like, if there is, like, a through line for me, it is, like, learn to understand something that, you know, you're either scared of or that you're nervous about. And that is definitely a through line for me with Rajasaur, where it's like, okay, you have these humans who are just trying to survive in a crazy world of dinosaurs. And you have this like girl who, again, like the only thing her father teaches her is like, I just want to survive. I just want to survive. But it's like, it's not just about protecting ourselves. It's about protecting, like, you know, others who like need it. And that's why she feels the need to like return this baby dinosaur egg to its mom. And so there are just so many key moments in the film where I'm just like extremely proud of, where it's like, without giving too much away, it's like there's a scene where the dinosaur is like looking at the girl, and it's right. Just like, you almost think that it's going to eat her, but then it's just kind of like, okay, right, not this time, and then walks away. Yep.
And there's a compassion thing again, you know. They built an alliance. That's what's cool. Let's play the trailer for Rajasaur so people can see this. Yeah. Here's Rajasaur. Yeah, Rajasaur. So tell me a little bit about, like, I know it's always hard for the, you know, the animation to kind of like be synced with your film, like what you were doing when you're filming. Tell me what that process was like in post. Like, you've got this animation dinosaur. Are they just kind of like placing it? Are you telling them, it needs to be higher up. This foot needs to be here. Tell me how you were able to direct the animation part of this process.
Well, yeah, because that really was like the thing that would make or break this film. First of all, it took an entire year just to like even come up with a good 3D model of Rajasaurus, because I hired this company called Akash Productions. They're this VFX company based in Calcutta to like just make a 3D Rajasaurus model.
Right.
And I had back and forth conversations with the VFX artists and Vaishali, and Vaishali had conversations with paleontologists because she knew them from writing her book. And the thing that was very important to me was that, like, okay, this looks like, you know, a dinosaur and it looks threatening and it looks menacing, but paleontologists, like, it's sometimes hard to make them happy.
Right.
Like, you want to come up with something like, oh, this is
crazy. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you want to come up with this cool movie monster, but then they're going to come in with their notes like, please, like, please change the teeth, please change the nose, like the spikes are fine, although you can take some out, or fix the eye, fix the little bump on the head, which I like to call that the dinosaur bindi. And it's just like, you know, that's part of the reason why it took an entire year, because I really wanted the paleontologist to be happy and be like, okay, we're representing accurately as we can.
Well, the other thing too, like, you know, I did an animated short, you know, that it's still on release, but it took us 4 years to make it, and you realize like how long it takes for animation to actually be this thing where you can see it working like in the movies, you know. And it's, man, the 3D modeling is one thing, the environment's another thing. It's like, it's so many layers to it, and I found it fascinating, but also like, my God, thank God I'm not in that world, because you have to have like extreme patience just to be able to do that. How did you find the process in that time frame where they were able to pull off like something that you could see and kind of like started to come to life? Tell me what that process was like.
It was a good learning experience for me, because this was the first time I fully went into like doing like computer generated VFX. And after like finalizing the model, I passed it off to Connor Thomas. He's a VFX artist based in LA. His studio name is Dead Cow Studios. And he put up with so much craziness from me, because I had to like learn a lot about like, hey, can we make the eyes like brighter, or can we like can we make it step right here, or can we like make it bigger, or can we make like the roar happen like this? And yeah, and then he had to educate me a lot, which is why it's like, you know, I'm so eternally grateful to him about how animating a CGI character works. And I think the one thing that he did extremely well was that he did an amazing job of just conveying emotion, because that was like the biggest thing for me, was like, you know, I don't want this to be just some monster who shows up for action scenes. Like, this is a character. And that's how I see like all my monster characters. Like, these aren't just monsters, these are characters. So, and you know, what do you do with
characters? I really like the coloring too. The coloring made it unique. Tell me about a little bit of like that detail. Why was it important to you, or was it to make it look different or from a different part of the world?
So like, I think that was a key thing for me, was that it's like, you know, I want this to look as unique as possible. Like, I didn't want anyone to just think like, oh, this is a T-Rex, except it just has like a little bump on its forehead. Like, I really wanted it to have like its own design and its own like unique quality to it. I think like we went with like this sort of orange and brown color, because it, to me, that always kind of symbolized like fire in some way.
Right.
I started thinking a lot about tigers and how it's like, it's just like this scary thing of orange like coming at you. So that was always like That was always like a key color factor for me, was that it's like, to me, it always just made me think of fire, and fire is scary when it comes at you. So, and of course, like, make it designed it naturally in a way where it looks like an animal. So,
tell me a little bit about, like, you know, there's one scene where there's a fight between the two male, kind of like the alpha males in the movie.
Yeah.
And there's like this green fog, or like this fog that's being spit. Is that like something from the folklore of the, like, the ancient, you know, heritage kind of consuming these dinosaur eggs to have powers? Is that where that came from?
Yeah. So I, one of like the things that we had to like kind of get into was that it's like, okay, this is a fictionalized world where humans and dinosaurs are coexisting. So what possibilities does that open up? And so that, what if we created like some cool supernatural monsters to go with this world? And so Sharon James, I collaborated with him a lot about Viper Man and how he would look. And we wanted to come up with like these like cool sort of powers that he has, like when his eyes turn red, it's like binocular vision, the fangs. The story of how the green knockout breath came to be was that it was right at the heart of COVID. And, you know, my costume designer was very much like, we have to incorporate masks like somehow into these prehistoric costumes.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well, why would we wear a mask we can wear it to keep ourselves quiet, but why else would we wear a mask? It's like, maybe Viper Man has some sort of toxic gas weapon. And it's like, that's perfect. I love it.
That was one nod to like, this was filmed in 2020, because I saw you go, you know, hold on. I was like, yes, this was definitely filmed in 2020, that little nod to the mask, you know?
Yeah. Well, and one of my favorite shots, honestly, is the shot where like, I don't have my mask on, he breathes his gas on me, and I actually do get knocked out. It's like, wow. Like, of course.
Like, that's truth serum right there. Where can people find this film, and where can people find you online?
So my handles are on Instagram are SweetJetNair94. You can find this film on the Pocket Films YouTube channel. It's also available on Disney Hotstar. And The Color of Me, you can find on Amazon Prime. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool South Asian monster stuff to come. So
I love it. Please, I mean, it's like a new genre. That's what I love. It's like you're taking that old Godzilla thing and you're making for our people, man. You're making for the Malayalis of the world. I love it.
I love it, man.
Well, Srijit, thank you so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. I appreciate you, and I want you to keep making movies. And if you ever need an extra, I'm your guy, dude. I'm your guy. If you ever need a monster eating an extra, right here, dude. I'm that guy, dude.
Thank you. I love it. Thank you.
Well, good luck with the movie. Good luck with future movies. And on behalf of myself and Srijit and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Peace and love, everybody.
Thank you.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.